So muksa. Muksa is an amazing topic. It's a little bit daunting and it's a little bit scary of a topic. People get nervous about the topic of muksa because there's so many different types of muksa. And the truth is, muksa is very complicated. We could spend a very long time learning all the sugyas. And I think it's important that we're realistic about what our goals are. Our goals are to be able to know what the halacha is regarding muksa in, let's throw out a number, 90% of the cases. There are a lot of complex machloksim about muksa. There's complex machloksim in the Gemara between Tanoim. Famously, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda have a famous machlokus about muksa. That is one of these sugyas that goes across lots of mesechtas. And it's sometimes mesechas beitza, mesechas Shabbos. And it's hard to really put your finger on what the machlokus is about and where the machlokus is. We also have lots of machloksim in the achronim, because besides these few machloksim between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, a lot of the analysis is done by the Rishonim, and there are many different approaches to the different types of muksa. So we're going to try to get down all of the basic klalim. Like I said, there are going to be a few areas that you'll still need to ask a good shaila to a good posek, but I think in 90% of the cases, 95% of the cases, you should be, after we're done, you should have a very good handle on muksa. So that's number one. We're going to probably do this for around 20 sessions. It's for, let's say, maybe not 4 months, 5 months, 20 sessions or so. And we're going to be going through all the different types of muksa. So today, I would like Bezras Hashem to do a introduction to muksa. Everyone should make sure that they have in front of them, not for today, but in general, a Mishnah Berurah Chelek Gimel. We're going to be doing for now Simen Shin Ches, which is the Simen, large Simen with 52 Seifim that discusses muksa. And we're going to try to work through it step by step. So a little bit of an introduction. First of all, what does muksa mean? The word muksa. So muksa means when you're maksa something midas, muksa means for something to be set aside. And muksa refers to things that are prohibited on Shabbos to move or to carry because they're set aside. We were not planning on using them on Shabbos, and therefore they're set aside. They're not for Shabbos use. It's a little bit of a funny concept. What does it make a difference if something is set aside? You know, Friday night, I didn't think I wanted to use my tennis racket. And now Shabbos morning, I want to use my tennis racket. So what's the problem? I wanted to move a pencil. So I decided I wanted to move a pencil. What's wrong with moving a pencil? Maybe it's okay to move a pencil. We're going to have to see. But just because I wasn't planning on using the pencil, why does that mean I can't move it on Shabbos? We know, and it's important, I think a lot of times people, if you haven't learned muksa, if you haven't learned Shabbos, this is a very common mistake that people make. Children make this mistake all the time. They don't distinguish between a malacha and muksa. We know that on Shabbos there are 39 malachos. Those are isurei dioraisa. The Torah tells us, we know that the Aseres HaDibros in one place says, Zachor Yom HaShabbos LaKadsho in Parshas Yisro. And in Parshas Veschanan and Devarim, when the Dibros are repeated, it says Shamor es Yom HaShabbos LeKadsho. So why do we change verbs Zachor to Shamor? So the Ramban writes that Zachor is the source for all of the mitzvos Aseh of Shabbos. Let's say saying Kiddush, which we spent time on last man. Kiddush, Zachor es Yom HaShabbos LeKadsho. In addition to that, Shamor es Yom HaShabbos LeKadsho, the way that the Dibros are brought down in Parshas Veschanan, so that is the source for all of the losases of Shabbos. So they are Isurei Dioraisa of Shabbos. It's interesting, if you look through the Torah, you will not find any psukim that tell us what the malachos of Shabbos are. The Mishnah in Perkei Avos alludes to this already. That Shabbos, we have so many halachos of Shabbos, but it's just a few psukim here and there in the Torah. The Torah tells us, lo sasa kol malacha. You can't do malacha on Shabbos. Okay, but what's malacha? Torah never tells us what malacha is. We have to figure out malacha on our own. So we know that there are 39 malachos, planting and plowing and writing and building. None of these things appear in the Chumash themselves. There's one malacha that appears in the Chumash, Havara, and there's a whole debate why there's one that's mentioned, you know, lighting a fire. But all the other malachos are not mentioned. That's malacha. Those are Yisurei Dioraisa. So when someone writes on Shabbos, they didn't do muksa, they did a malacha. It's an Yisurei Dioraisa. Muksa is a Din D'Rabbanan. Muksa is a prohibition to move or carry items. Now, when I say carry, I don't mean carry from rishus to rishus. That's a malacha. To carry from a private domain to a public domain, from rishus hayachid to rishus harabim, or from rishus harabim to rishus hayachid, that's an iser dioraisa. That's a malacha. That's hotzah. But there's a dirabanan to move even within one domain, even within your home, within a rishus hayachid, to move a muksa item is an iser dirabanan. So we have to always make sure that we're not confusing muksa and malachos. Okay, that's, so we've talked about what muksa means, and we've differentiated between the dirabanans that are referred to as muksa and the dioraisas that are referred to as malachos. Now, muksa is actually a fascinating dirabanan. Fascinating dirabanan. Maybe we'll start. I sent out, I don't know how many people got a chance to see the Makoro sheet that I sent out, or if they have it in front of them. So I'll put it up on the screen. There's a really fascinating Gemara that I'd like us to look at. Should I put it on the screen, or do people have it? Thumbs up on the screen. People have it. No one needs it. Thumbs up. I should put it on the screen. Okay. So some people have it. Some people want it on the screen. So let me see if I can get it up here. Okay. Hold on one second. Let me try that again. Okay, here we go. I hope you could see my screen. Yeah, someone give me a thumbs up. They can see my screen. Okay, excellent. Very good. Thank you. So we have here a Gemara. I'm going to start with the second Gemara over here. This one here. It's Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chaf Gimel. So the Gemara tells us as follows. Tana Rabbanan, Berishona hayu omrim shlosha kelim nidlin b'Shabbos. There were three kelim that are allowed to be carried on Shabbos. That's it. No other kelim could be carried on Shabbos. What are they? Miktsoa shel devela, something for cutting figs of some sort. Vi, oh boy, what's going on? Someone's writing on my screen. Okay. Vi zuama listrin shel kedera. Oh boy, how do I stop that? Is that bad? So cool. Okay. I'm not sure who's doing that or how to stop that, but let's see here. I'm sure there's probably a way I could prevent people. There we go. I can prevent people from writing. Okay. So going back to what we're doing here. So I imagine that's probably one of my kids. Anyway, the Gemara tells us like this. Let me reshare here. Okay. So we're told like this. Brishona haya omrim shlosha kelim nitlin b'Shabbos mitzoa shel devela v'zuama listran shel kedera. The second kli was something for a kaf, a spoon, for skimming off of the top of the soup some of the fats, and a sakin katana shel gabe shulchan, and a small knife that was on the shulchan for cutting bread, for cutting meat. So besides these three very basic kalim that everybody needs, something for cutting the figs, which apparently was a popular food back then, something for skimming the fat off of the top of the pot, or a small knife for cutting the bread and the meat, all other kalim were muksa. And that's a very big chiddush. When we say kalim, generally kalim are not muksa. Think about the things in your house, your cups, your forks, your cabinet, you know, your night table. These things are not muksa because these are things that you use regularly. They're not out of your mind, like out of your mind, meaning they're not, you don't set them aside in your mind. But the Gemara tells us that originally, all kalim except for three were muksa. Then the Gemara tells us hitiru, but then they were matir v'chazru v'hitiru, and then they were matir again v'chazru v'hitiru, and they were matir again. Ad sh'amru, until it reached the point where they said kol ha'kalim. Now it's the opposite. All kalim can be carried on Shabbos. Chutz min meser hagadol, masur hagadol v'yateid shel machresha, except for these two very specific vessels, some type of big saw of some sort, and pieces from the plow, meaning very highly specialized vessels. But besides that, all kalim were allowed. So again, Birishona, originally all kalim were usur except for three very commonly used kalim. Then they were matir, and they allowed all the kalim except for these two very highly specialized and expensive kalim. So Gemara asks, what does this mean that they were chazur v'tirus? The Gemara starts telling you they were started allowing certain rules. Last line in the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Chanina, when was this whole discussion taking place? Bimei Nechemya ben Chachalia, Nishnas Mishnazu. This Mishnah was taught in the times of Nechemya, like from Ezra and Nechemya. Tichsiv, as it says in Nechemya, and then we have a Pasuk, Nechemya says, Bayamim Ahema, Ra'isi Bihuda, Darchim Gitos Beshabbos, Umivim Ha'aremos. Nechemya, just a very quick history lesson for us. We know that the Jews, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Jews were sent into Golos, into Bavel. And in Golos Bavel, they were there for around 70 years or so. And then the Jews start coming back to Eretz Yisrael because the Persians gave them permission to come back to Eretz Yisrael. The first Jews to come back were under Zerubbabel. After Zerubbabel, Zerubbabel started the building of the Beis HaMikdash. After Zerubbabel built the Beis HaMikdash, Ezra came back from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. And then after Ezra, Nehemiah came. Nehemiah is very famous for rebuilding the walls of Yerushalayim and strengthening the physical walls of Yerushalayim. But one of the things Nehemiah tells us is that when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he saw that people were being Mechal Shabbos. Right? That's the pasuk we just read. Ra'isi B'Yehuda, I saw in the center of the country, people were working with their olive presses and they were working in the fields. They were working on Shabbos. So Nehemiah strengthened Shmira Shabbos. So that's what the Gemara tells us here, that this Gemara, that all Kalim were usur, except for three very, very necessary Kalim, that was in the times of Nehemiah that took place. And then they ended up being Matir until they started to allow most Kalim, except for some very specific Kalim. So the reason why I'm saying this is so fascinating is because you see here that seemingly Muksa is a very early Gezerah. All the way back from the times of Nehemiah that they made this Gezeres. That's basically the time period of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. But the truth is, there's another Gemara that sends Muksa even further back into history. Oh, I unshared too quickly. Here, the Gemara tells us, the first Gemara on the source sheet up here, Gemara and Shabbos on Daf Lamed. Kol Yoma de Shabbos Avi Yosef Vigores Kula Yoma. This is talking about David HaMelech. David HaMelech would sit all Shabbos learning. Ahu Yoma de Boy Lemenech Nafshe. On the day that he was supposed to die, come Malach HaMavis kameh v'lo yochaleh. The Malach HaMavis wanted to get him, but he couldn't because David was learning all day. The Torah's matzil, so he couldn't get him. To lavi pasuk pumei migirsa because he wasn't stopping to learn. So Omar, my avidleh. So the Malach HaMavis said, "What can I do?" This is a very interesting story, just in general. Havidleh bostenach harei beisei. So David HaMelech had a very nice orchard in his backyard. So the Malach HaMavis came and started shaking the trees. Nofek lemechse, David HaMelech went out to go see what was going on. Havi solek bedarga, so he stopped learning. The Malach HaMavis is waiting for him outside. When he went outside, he fell down the stairs. Ifches darga mitute, he went down on the stairs and the stairs fell from beneath him. Ishtak v'nach nafshe, and he passed away, he died. Shalach Shlomo lebei Midrasha. Interesting. David HaMelech's son, Shlomo. So he sent the Shiloh to the Beis Medrash. Abba Meis umutah b'chama. My father passed away. He's sitting out here in the sun. It's not respectful for his body. Me'aseh. What can I do? How can I move him? He's muksa. A dead body is muksa. So Shalchulei. So from the Beis Medrash, the Sanhedrin, they told him, Hanach alav kikar otinaku v'talatlo. Whatever. They gave him some type of advice of how he can get around the Isser of muksa. So it's interesting. Shlomo HaMelech is clearly aware of the dinim of muksa already. Right? It's not like someone came and said to him, "Oh, by the way, he's muksa." Shlomo knew he was muksa. He just wasn't sure how to, he wasn't sure how to carry the body at that point. So you see, this is way before Nehemiah. You see from this Gemara that already at the times of David HaMelech, there was a isser of muksa. There was a derabbanon of muksa. So what's going on here? When was muksa established? Why was it established? If the Gemara says Nehemiah established it, but then they later, at a later time, it says that they were mako, they abolished some of the laws. So what are we keeping today? How do we put all this together? So it's a very interesting historical question. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav and the Aruch HaShulchan, so they both write that the history is as follows. This is their suggestion. They say that Muksa is a very, very early takana, at least from the times of David HaMelech, from you see in the Gemara. The Aruch HaShulchan suggests it was even from the Beis Din of Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu made takanos, for instance, Zayin Yimei, the 7 days of Avelus. is machlokas a little bit, but is probably from Moshe Rabbeinu. The 7 days of Chasen Dekala, Simchas Chasen Dekala, right? We know this for 7 days after a wedding, it's supposed to be Mesameach Chasen Dekala. So that's also, that's a takana of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu was misakin a bunch of things. So they suggest, the Aruch HaShulchan says, this was probably from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is probably a takana from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu that they had this takana called Muksa. When Nehemiah came to Eretz Yisrael, so he saw that there was a tremendous amount of Chilul Shabbos that was taking place. So he was misaken new takanos of Muksa and went way beyond the original takana of Moshe Rabbeinu in order to asser everything except for these three basic kalim that were absolutely necessary. That we see with Nehemiah, that he came and he saw the Chilul Shabbos. And then a little bit later, when he saw that the Jews got the message and they were much more zahir on the Isur of Muksa and the Isur of Shabbos, so then he was matir and reestablished Muksa back on the original takana that Moshe Rabbeinu had established. And this explanation is very necessary because in general, when a Beis Din makes a takana, you're not able to abolish it by a later Beis Din. How come they were able to abolish the takana that Nehemiah made? The answer is because Nehemiah was just adding a chumrah on what was the original takana of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was a temporary chumrah, a chumrah just for that door because of the rampant Chilul Shabbos. But once they went back to being zahir, so Muksa was returned to its original takana, which was the takana of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, why was Muksa established? And this is very, very famous and very yesodistic material about why was Muksa established. Just give me 1 second, I'll be right back. Okay, sorry about that. I'm back. Okay, so that is the history of Muksa. Muksa was established very early, maybe from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, but certainly by the times of David HaMelech and Shlomo. And Nehemiah instituted a temporary chumrah of Muksa because of the rampant Chilul Shabbos, but then the takana went back to the original takana of Muksa. Now, what are the reasons for Muksa? So here we have something very, very fascinating. Really, I find it to be very, very interesting. I'll bring the Makoro sheet up again here on the screen. So the Torah tells us as follows in Shmos. Vayom ha-shvi tishpos leman yanuach shorcha v'chamorecha v'yinofesh ben amoscha v'hager. The Torah here tells us, Vayom ha-shvi tishpos, you should rest. We have a similar pasuk in Shmos Lamed Aleph. Sheishas yomim ye'asem elocha uvayom ha-shvi shabbos shabboson kodesh l'ashem. So you see that there's this commandment of tishpos that you should rest. What's this commandment to rest? So the Rashba writes in his Chidushim on Yevamos, in the beginning of Yevamos, the Rashba writes, Tishbos is not really a mitzvah saseh. I mean, it is a mitzvah saseh, but it's not really an independent mitzvah saseh. We have malachos, 39 malachos, lo sasa kol malacha, that's a lav. If you're over on the lav, so you're also mevatel the aseh of Tishbos. Tishbos is just the flip side of the los ases. Does that make sense? You hear what I'm saying? There's los ases called los ases kol malacha, and the flip side of that is tishbos. But tishbos is not an independent mitzvah. You don't like go around on Shabbos and say, oh, I really like to be mekayim tishbos right now. You could be mekayim in the mitzvah of kiddush, but you're memela, you're mekayim tishbos when you don't do malacha. And if you're over on malacha, so you're also mevatel the asay of tishbos. Tishbos is just the flip side. That's what the Rashba writes. However, the Ramban writes something very yesodistic. Take a look at this Ramban. Ramban here is actually writing about Yontiv, but it's true he says also about Shabbos. It's the Ramban in Vayikra Chaf Gimel. Mitztavinu min haTorah. Everyone sees where I am? Shmuel, you're able to see where I am? You're on my screen, so I'm able to see you. Mitztavinu, you see this right over here, the Ramban? Yeah? Simcha? Yeah? Somebody? Okay, good. Nitztavinu min haTorah lios lanu menucha b'yontiv. We are commanded to rest on yontiv. Afilu midvarm she'enan malacha. Even from things that are not malacha. Lo sheyitzroch kol hayom limdod hatvuos. Hashem doesn't want us to spend all day Shabbos sitting there and weighing our grain or weighing our peros. And im haisa ha'ir mukefas choma, if you would have a city that was mukefas choma, meaning there was an eruv, you'd be able to carry. Yeshuk male lakom mekachu memkar, the shuk can be open. You can have all the stores open because all these things, not writing, not doing business, these are, well, writing you're obviously not allowed to do, but not doing business, weighing things, these are all derabanans. The store would be open. Therefore, lakach omra Torah Shabbason. Therefore, the Torah tells us Shabbason. Shia yom shvisa umenucha lo yom torah. In order that it should be a day of rest. What's the Ramban getting at here? Ramban is learning that Shabbason or Tishbos, however we want to, whichever pasuk we're going to take it from, he learns it from Shabbason, is actually a positive commandment to have a day of rest. Meaning, it's true, you can't do the malachos. But that's not what Shabbason is. Shabbason is beyond the malachos. In addition to not doing the malachos, you also have to refrain from things that would be pogeya, that would take away from the character of the day of being a yom menucha. Why am I quoting this Ramban? Because muksa, when we talk about muksa, muksa basically has two purposes to it. There are two purposes to muksa. Purpose number one is to maintain the unique character of the day of Shabbos as a day of rest. And the background to understanding that purpose behind muksa is this Ramban. If we didn't have muksa, you could have a regular day of the week on Shabbos. It's true, you can't do malacha, but there's so many other things that you can do that are not malachos. So you could spend the time, you can weigh your fruits and vegetables, you can even sell them probably, you can receive money. Money's not an issur d'oraisa. Money's muksa. So you can sell things, you can collect money, you can weigh things out, and the business would continue to run all Shabbos. If people had an opportunity, had the option to be able to run their business on Shabbos, so they would run their business on Shabbos. So therefore, in order to protect that character of the day, so therefore there's this din called Shabbason. That's right. As Yaakov pointed out, there's this inyan that you have to do something that Shabbostik on Shabbos to maintain the character of the day. So is something Shabbostik? I think that's a great point Yaakov's making. Meaning, when you say to somebody, oh, that's not Shabbostik. So we usually interpret that to be like a Musar idea. No, it's a Musar idea. You're not doing anything officially wrong, but it's not Shabbostik. According to the Ramban, you're being mevatel the asay of, and I'm not taking sides right now, but let's just give an example. Changing into shorts and t-shirt and sitting and playing a full court basketball game and sweating. And so, you know, someone will walk by and be like, tisk, 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 that's not Shabbostik. But the Ramban might walk by and the Ramban might say, you're being mevatel the asay of Shabbason. Because the asay of Shabbason is not just not to do the malachas. That's what my Talmud, the Rashba, holds. But I, the Ramban, hold that Shabbason is an independent asay to maintain the character of the day. Accordingly, the Ramban writes that muksa is a kiyum of that din of Shabbason. Muksa is a gzeira derabanan. But when you fulfill muksa, when you don't carry muksa things, so you're fulfilling the asay of Shabbason, which means that even though it is a dirabanan, there's a kiyum.
An asmachta?
There's a kiyum of a dioraisa. I'll give you a mashal lama dover doma, even though it's the opposite, because it's about a positive action, and we're talking about refraining. I'll give you an example. Nicham avelim. Biker cholim. Is there ever a chiyuv of biker cholim? There's no chiyuv midioraisa to be mbaker cholim. The Rambam writes that there's a mitzvah sase called v'haftal reicha kamocha. This is what the Rambam writes. Midrabanan, Chazal were misakein, biker cholim, nicham avelim, as ways to be mekayim the dioraisa v'haftal reicha kamocha. So you don't have a chiyuv midioraisa to be mevaker cholim, but if you go and you are mevaker cholim, you're mekayim a mitzvah dioraisa v'haftal reicha kamocha. So in a sort of similar way, the Ramban writes, there's an asay called Shabbason. Shabbason means to protect the character of the day. How are you protect the character of the day? So Chazal came and were misaking all of the dinim of Muksa, which are all derabbanans, but they're there in order to assist you in fulfilling the Dioraisa. Because if they didn't make the dinim of Muksa, you would be able to carry on your day and violate Shabbason. Okay, this is what the Ramban writes. Now, the Rambam writes a very similar thing. The truth is, if you have a Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah brings it as a Hakdama to Shin Ches. I'm not going to read it all inside right now, but I encourage everyone before we start, so by next week, to read the Hakdama. It's just a couple of lines in the beginning of Simin Shin Ches, but I did give it to you here on the Makoro sheet. The Rambam, famous Rambam, when the Rambam explains why we have Muksa, he says like this, Yesh Devarim, I'm in Perek Chaf Dalet. Yesh Devarim Shein Asurim B'Shabbos, Afa Pishenim Domen L'Malacha, Ve'enu Mivien L'Dei Malacha. There are things that are Asur on Shabbos, even though they themselves don't cause you to do Malacha. So why, and they're not similar to Malacha, so then why are they Asur? Mishum Shenemar, and he quotes a Pasuk in Yeshayahu, which I put higher here on the sheet. Im Toshev Mishabbos Raglecha, Asos Chafotzecha B'Yom Kachi. Yeshayahu Anabi says, that on Shabbos, you should rest your legs from doing your regular things on the Shabbos. You should call Shabbos a day of Oneg, a day L'kdosh Hashem Mechubad, V'chibadito, Me'asos Drachecha, Mimtso Chafzecha V'daber Dover. That this is where we know the halacha, the famous halacha, that on Shabbos, you're not supposed to speak about non-Shabbos things. You're not supposed to discuss business on Shabbos. Why not? That's this pasuk in Yeshayahu. So the Rambam quotes this pasuk, and he says like this, Lefikach, I'm in the second line, end of the second line at the end. Lefikach, Asur la Adam lahaloch b'chfatzov b'Shabbos, v'yafilu l'daber b'him. Therefore, you're not allowed to walk on Shabbos with all of your mundane whole items. You're not supposed to speak about them. Like, for instance, to speak with your business partner, what you're going to sell tomorrow. Asru chachamim l'taltel miksas tvarim b'Shabbos, kederach shu osa b'chol. And so too, Chazal were goes there not to carry things on Shabbos, the same way that you do during the week. Why did they make this gezeira of muksa? They said, well, wait a second. Im his hirunivim v'tzivu shlo yehiluchacha b'Shabbos hiluchacha b'chol. If Chazal made a takana, a gezeira, if the Navi told us that we shouldn't walk on Shabbos like we walk during the week, and we shouldn't talk on Shabbos like we talk during the week, as it says, v'daber dover, kal v'chomer, that we shouldn't carry on Shabbos the way we carry during the week, in order so that it won't be a yom chol be'enav. Now this is very interesting. Unlike the Ramban, who was very focused on the business and on the shuk, says the Rambam something very different, which I think maybe speaks to us even more. V'yavo lahagbia ulatakin kelim mipina lepino mibayis lebayis. You can end up moving things around your house. Olahatznia avonim ukiyotze bohem. Sharei hu batel v'yoshev v'beiso. What happens on Shabbos? Everyone's sitting around. So hopefully we learn a little bit. You know, maybe we play a board game. But everyone's sitting around. It's a long Shabbos. So what do you do all Shabbos afternoon? So the Rambam says, if there was no din of muksa, you know what you would do? You would clean a room. You would reorganize all of the shelves. You would, do some gardening work in your backyard. You would do things that are not malacha. But you would do household chores. Everyone has that list of household chores that they need to get to. Shabbos is a perfect day. Nothing going on. So I'll do all the household chores. Because you're Yoshev Ubatel. V'yivakesh dover shi'isasokbo. Yitasekbo. Everyone's looking for something to do. And it'll be nimtza shlo shavas. It'll end up that you didn't rest. And you'll be mevatel the Torah, which says, l'man yanuach. Now l'man yanuach is back to this pasuk up here. Tishbos l'man yanuach. So like the Ramban, just with a little bit of a different focus, the Rambam says, there's a mitzvah called Tishbos. There's a pasuk says, L'man Yanuach, you're supposed to rest. So we need muksa in order to maintain the unique character of the day. The difference, the Ramban stresses it all coming from the pasuk of Tishbos. The Rambam builds it from the pasuk in Yeshayahu, but also learns out the same yesod. So the first reason for muksa is to maintain the character of the day. What's the second reason, because I said there were two reasons. The second reason is the Rambam continues, and the Rambam writes as follows. The Rambam writes that when a person carries things, he might come to use them. And since, let's say, a pen is usher to use on Shabbos, you're not allowed to write on Shabbos. If we allowed you to move and to carry a pen, you might come to write with it. So the second reason of not of muksa is to prevent us from doing malachos. So we really have two very independent reasons for the takana of muksa. Reason number one, to maintain the unique character of the day. This is a dirabanan, but at its core, its essence is really a din d'oraisa of tishbos, at least the way that the Ramban learns tishbos. And the second reason for the isra of muksa is to prevent us from violating malachos. Don't touch objects that you don't need on Shabbos because you might end up using them. Those are our two reasons that the Rambam brings down. Now the Ravid, the famous Bar Plukta of the Rambam, who always argues with the Rambam, so the Ravid comments and says, I don't understand. The Rambam came up with two very creative explanations to maintain the Kedusha of the unique rest element of the day and to prevent us, a siyag, from doing malacha. But the Gemara in Beitza asks this question itself. The Gemara in Beitza asks, why were they masakin muksa? And it has an answer. And guess what? It's none of the two answers that the Rambam gave. The Ravid says, you know why we have a din of muksa? I'll tell you what the Gemara says. The Gemara says to prevent us from carrying. And what does that mean, prevent us from carrying? Meaning prevent us from carrying hotzah, carrying from rishus to rishus. Think about it. If you could just pick up random kalim, you know, you pick up a pen, stick it in your pocket. Next thing you know, you walk out of your house to shul and you realize you just carried from your house into the street. Now, I know nowadays most of us live in places where there is an Eruv. But if you live in a place where there's not an Eruv, so if you carry from your house out to the street, you were just over on Isser D'oraisa. So in order to prevent people from carrying, we try to minimize as much as possible any interaction with kalim. So kalim that you need to use, like a fork or a spoon, all right, you'll use it. You need it to eat. But any other kalim are muksa in order so that you don't end up being over on carrying. So it's like the Rambam. The Rambam said it's to prevent malacha, but it's much more hyper-focused. It's not to prevent malacha in general. It's to prevent a very specific malacha, and that's the malacha of hotzah. Now, it is very strange. Why in the world does the Rambam ignore the ta'am that's given in the Gemara and create his own two brand new ta'amim that aren't mentioned in the Gemara? So the Magid Mishnah has a very beautiful explanation right there in the Rambam, and it has to do with all the history that we started this shir with. The Magid Mishnah writes that when the Gemara is talking about that muksa is in order to prevent hotzah, it's specifically talking about the extra takana of Nehemia that was super machmir about malacha, about muksa. Remember, what did Nehemia do? Nehemia saw that everybody was being mechal Shabbos. So he said, that's it. Everything is usser except for these three kalim. Why is everything usser? So he told them why. I'll tell you why. We can't trust you guys touching anything because you're going to end up carrying with it. You're so oblivious to Shabbos. I have to usher everything, Shema, you're going to end up carrying with all these things. That's the reason. The reason in the Gemara is why Nehemiah put this additional layer of muksa on the original takana of muksa. But the Rambam is telling you what was the original reason for muksa. The original reason of muksa was A, to maintain the character of the day, and B, you shouldn't be in touch with kalim that could be used for isurim. Right? Remember, Nehemiah ushered all kalim, even kalim that could be used for heter. It's important at this time that we just introduce two terms. There are kalim shemalachtam le'isser and kalim shemalachtam le'heter. Kalim whose primary purpose is for malachos, like a pen. The primary reason you use a pen is not to scratch your back, it's to write with, which is a malacha. So that's a kli shemalachtam le'isser. A kli shemalachtam le'heter is something that's normally used for a heter purpose, like a cup. A cup is generally used for heter purpose, to drink. So the Rambam, when he says, I'll tell you why there's muksa. First of all, we need to maintain the character of the day. So carrying things that are not necessary for Shabbos, malacha, is muksa. We don't want you to start doing those things. In addition, anything which could be used for a malacha is going to be muksa. Shema, you end up doing the malacha. So that's how the Magid Mishnah explains why the Ravid's question on the Rambam is not a question. to summarize, what we see is that we're working with this assumption that Muksa is a very unique and special takana, gzeira d'rabbanan. It's from all the way back to the times of David and maybe even from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's to maintain the character of the day and also to prevent the violation of malacha. And I'm going to conclude our introduction here just with going over the main categories of muksa that we're going to be speaking about. And it's important that we start getting these terms down. Okay, the first one that we're going to be speaking about, Mirtz Hashem, next week is the first one that's discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, and that's muksa machmas chesron kis, category number one. I gave you on the source sheet the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef, in the beginning of Hilchos Muksa, he tells you these six categories. So you can take a look at that inside when you review. He spells out for you the six categories. Number one is muksa machmas chesron kis, which means an object which is generally not used because for other any purpose besides its primary purpose because of its value. So for instance, a expensive camera. You generally do not use an expensive camera for anything besides taking pictures, but you would not use it for any other purpose. And since we don't take pictures on Shabbos, so that's it. You cannot use this camera for anything on Shabbos. It's muksa machmas chesron kis. We're going to talk about all the parameters of that Mirtz Hashem next week. Second category is a kli shemalachta l'isser. We already said what that means. That's an object which is primarily used for an isser, like a pen is primarily used for writing. Number three is muksa machmas gufo. These are objects that the way that the Shulchan Aruch words it, these are objects that are not a kli. They're not a food. They have no inherent use on Shabbos. Not something that's used for an isser. They just don't have any inherent use, like a rock or dirt. A rock has no inherent use on Shabbos. It's not a kli, meaning it's not a functioning item. It's not food. So muksa machmas gufo. Number four, a basis l'davar aser. A basis l'davar aser means something that is a base for an object which is muksa. So for instance, if you have a night table is a kli that's functioning, we can use it, it's not muksa. But if I have a rock on the night table, so now the night table becomes a basis for a davar muksa. And that means that we have to treat the basis, the night table, also as muksa. Number five, this is also sometimes called muksa machmas iser. The way the Shulchan Aruch writes it is muksa, because that doesn't really flow off the tongue, muksa machmas shahaya mechubar o mechusar tzeidu ben hashmashas. That's the name of the category. It doesn't really flow. But what it means is anything which when Shabbos began, it was halachically not usable on Shabbos. What does that mean? Like, for instance, an apple, but it's connected to the tree when Shabbos begins. So an apple is totally mutter on Shabbos. But if it's connected to the tree, the only way I can get to it is by ripping it off the tree, which is a malacha. Or an animal. An animal, which is, you know, an animal is normally mutter. I mean, it's meat. You can eat it. But if it's alive and it's running around when Shabbos begins, so it's muksa because it has no purpose on Shabbos, this Shabbos. Because when Shabbos began, it was not able to be used on Shabbos. And the last category is muksa machmas mitzvah, something which is set aside for a mitzvah, and therefore we can't use it for other purposes. The classic example is that the sukkah schach, or the decorations that you hang from the schach, are not able to be used on yontiv or on Shabbos. Right? Muksa is on yontiv as well, because it's already huksa lemitzvah. All right, just two or three last final points, and we'll end with this, just one or two more points of introduction. One is, and this is also a misconception that people have, muksa is specifically a problem to carry or move a muksa item. There's absolutely nothing wrong with touching a muksa item. People say, oh, you can't touch it, it's muksa. It's not true. You can touch it, you just can't move it, and you can't carry it. Number two, it's only a problem to carry it if you carry it in the normal way. If you carry it in an abnormal way, and we're going to spend time defining what does that mean, an abnormal way. But if you do it in an abnormal way, that's also not a problem. And that makes a lot of sense. If the concern of muksa is we want to maintain the character of the day, we don't have to worry. If the only way you're allowed to carry this thing is like, you know, with your pinkies or with your, you know, with your chin, we don't have to worry that you're going to start redesigning your living room on Shabbos. And you're not going to rest because you're going to be doing all this work. You can't do work in an abnormal way. Also, if it's that you might come to writing if you're already carrying the pen in a very weird way, you pick it up with your mouth, so you're not going to start writing. It's only when you do it in the normal way that your mind forgets and you start writing. And the last piece of introduction is just that there is carrying or moving things indirectly for the sake of a permitted object. Like, for instance, if I drop in the dirt, a book, I can pick the book up, even though I'm going to move some dirt, but I'm not attempting to move the dirt. I'm attempting to move my book. It happens to move some dirt as well. That's also going to be permissible. So there are even times when you can move muksa if your purpose is not for the muksa item itself. Okay, so that's our introduction to muksa. Mirtz Hashem, next week, we're going to talk about, probably for 1 week, muksa machmas chesron kis, try to go through the definitions of what that means. And then the week after that, we'll get to muksa, klishim achta le'isr, and we'll go one by one through all of the different types of muksa. So everyone should have a great week. Amir Tzashem, I'm going to send out the notes for today, and see everyone hopefully next week. Good to have everybody back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mari.
Yes, please.
What did the Shulchan Aruch Rav say?
Shulchan Aruch Rav just says that it's clear that muksa was not really instituted by Nehemiah. It's clear it was instituted before that. Probably, he says, from the days of David, but maybe even before.
What's his right? Well, he says like the Aruch HaShulchan?
Well, the Aruch HaShulchan goes very far. He says that it has to be from the times of Moshe because it's so rooted in the Pasuk. The Torah tells you Shabbason, and then you're like at a loss. How am I supposed to fulfill that? So it had to be that right away Moshe Rabbeinu instituted things in order to fulfill Shabbason. That's the Aruch HaShulchan. But the Shulchan Aruch HaRav just says it's very old. You see from the Gemara, for sure it was there already at the time of David, and maybe even earlier.
And if you say it's from Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, that's because he's Shabbason, so it's not a deraisa. It's not an asmachta.
Well, it's not a deraisa, but it's like Masru HaKasav V'Chachamim. The Torah says you have to Shabbason, you have to rest completely. And the Chachamim came and said, well, we therefore need to be misaking things in order so that you are able to fulfill this din of Shabbason.
And you're saying that you're not actually, what was the word? You're not Makaim Shabbason. You said a whole...
I said that the act itself is not the Oraisa because Muksa itself is the Rabbanan. But it's in order to help you be Makaim.
Davis, I'm not Makaim Shabbason?
No, if I don't do Muksa, so then I'm Mekayim, the Dioraisa of Shabbason. So we have a Dirabbanon. It itself is a Dirabbanon. And that's what I was saying, that Bikur Cholim is a Dirabbanon. But when you do it, you're Mekayim, a Dioraisa. What I mean, it's a Dirabbanon, meaning it was instituted by the Rabbanim. It wasn't in the Pasuk. There's no Torah Pasuk in the Torah that tells you to be Mevaker Cholim. The Rabbanon created that. But they created that because they were concerned. They wanted to make sure you would fulfill the Dioraisa of the Yahaf L'Reach HaKamocha. If we leave it up to every person to be mekayim the after l'reach kamocha, they might not. So came along Chazal and said, "Be mevaker cholim, be do nicham aveilim, do kfura same." Oh, kfura is the araisa probably. But they gave a bunch of different things that you can do in order to be mekayim the after l'reach kamocha.